A defence which has been on the rise and has cost Australians up to $1 billion.
Most people sort of fantasise about flying. Most people think about it. So rather than just thinking about it, we do it.
I've been stopped on the street and spat on.
How many pages do I have to do and how much have I done so far? And I've only done like 1%.
And bang, within like a split second, I had no time to react. I was on the ground.
Because the reason why this is even occurring is because there's a demand.
Good evening and welcome to Razor's Edge. My name is Ellie Madrich, and for the next half an hour, we'll be going deep and looking closely at the current affairs and pressing issues in New South Wales this week. From the big stuff to the small stuff, it all affects you and it's all covered here at Razor's Edge. Tonight, we investigate Mayor Darcy Byrne's pledge to welcome refugees onshore and how the local community is responding. Then we have a Seeking Sydney question from 2SER's very own Michael Jones. Monica Samayoa took out to answer the question, how did they build Fort Denison on such a tiny island in the middle of Sydney Harbour? It's a good question, so stick around, Sydney, because we've got you covered here at Razor's Edge on 2SER 107.3.
Newtown, Uncle Hops is celebrating Sydney Beer Week with a series of craft beer-focused events. You can meet the newest homebrew legend, vote for your favourite brewery in the State of Origin beer battle, or come along to the launch of Uncle Hops' very own beer. Sydney Beer Week is on now. Head to bankhotel.com.au for more info. The Bank Hotel Newtown, sponsors of 2SER 107.3.
If not that, the top of certain daughters. Get with that or get in the mosh pit. Where's your moxie? Ain't true from Poppy, young man. You not acting too cocky. Probably cause I'm feeling like the world gon' crash. Brother Hunter's son on the E-class dash. I'm feeling funny, guarantee gon' flash. Cock back blast, put him in the back. Probably gon' regret it in the retrospect. Got a lot of problems, I ain't let go yet. Spend a lot of money on the CDG. And I look a lily on the TV screen. Battle with the white man day by day. Feds taking pictures, doing play by play. They'll never want to see the black man eat. Nails in the black man, hands and feet. Put him on the cross, so he put him on the chain. Lines to be saying he don't look like me. Roll cage on the GT3. Had a show on stage like a DVD. Put me in the mama on the show with. I used to look up to the sky, now I'm over shit.
That was Vince Staples with Crabs in a Bucket. Now on to our first story. It's been a matter of weeks since the newly elected Inner West Council members took the helm at the council chambers, but election promises are already gaining traction. As debates about the fate of asylum seekers on Manus Island dominate public discourse, the newly elected mayor of the Inner West Council, Labour's Darcy Byrne, has pledged to welcome refugees onshore by expanding operations at the Refugee Welcome Centre in Callan Park. Byrne has criticised the former unelected council for failing to roll out more services at the centre, which has been operating for the past 7 months. The move has prompted calls for more community-driven support in other councils to help refugees overcome trauma. Georgia Clark has this report.
It's a lonely and painstaking journey to travel thousands of kilometres away from your home, fearing for your life. And for the fortunate few refugees who are resettled in the Australian community, this trauma persists. But the newly elected mayor of the Inner West Council, Darcy Byrne, wants to ease this transition by expanding operations at the Refugee Welcome Centre in Callan Park. The move comes after Byrne criticised the former unelected council for failing to make use of community interest in the project.
I think we've got to be a lot more ambitious. The truth is that the unelected Inner West Council didn't progress the Refugee Welcome Centre anywhere near far enough. There's enormous public support for us to offer a service there which offers a welcome and a helping hand to people who are escaping war and famine. And I'd like to see us with a day centre which is offering a range of employment and English language and education services, and for lots of local community organisations like sports clubs and churches and local schools to be involved in volunteering there. And in the long term, we'd like to see short-term accommodation for people who've recently arrived in Australia.
The centre has been operating since the start of the year and welcomed around 900 refugees as a day centre directing refugees to service providers and agencies. But according to Byrne, despite 500 volunteers putting their hand up to help out, only a few were taken up on this offer. Now, Byrne is reviving calls to expand services at the centre. Darcy Byrne again.
And I'd like to see us with a day centre which is offering a range of employment and English language and education services, and for lots of local community organisations like sports clubs and churches and local schools to be involved in volunteering there. And in the long term, we'd like to see short-term accommodation for people who've recently arrived in Australia.
With just 135 humanitarian arrivals settled in Marrickville between 2005 and 2011, Byrne hopes that extending operations at the centre may encourage refugees to migrate to the Inner West, with the majority forced into the outer suburbs of Sydney by gentrification.
Because of the cost of housing in Sydney, we have seen increasing segregation along socioeconomic grounds, but also ethnic grounds. The vast majority of newly arrived asylum seekers and refugees who are coming to Sydney are landing in places like Fairfield and Liverpool, in part because there's established communities there and people like to live where they know others and might have family members, but also because, let's face it, the Inner West has become such an expensive place to live. If you're someone who's escaping war and famine and doesn't have a lot of financial resources, you're probably not going to be able to afford the rent in a place like the Inner West. That's why it's so important that we be proactive in finding ways to include those people in our local community.
According to Timothy O'Connor from the Refugee Council, community support is crucial to help refugees deal with trauma.
The toxic political debate that exists around people seeking asylum in this country it takes up all the debate. It's like a sinkhole. When really there's another side of the story, and the, you know, the issues around asylum are horrendous, and Australia has a terribly punitive approach that's doing great damage to our international reputation and to people's lives. But on the other side of it, we have a very long and strong record of successfully resettling people in Australia. We have a good resettlement program. Crucial to that is welcome by local communities. Local government areas play a very important role. The leadership that's shown by our local government leaders is absolutely crucial to making people feel welcome, which is one of the key attributes that leads to successful integration and ultimately a stronger society.
Byrne says he is fighting fiercely to ensure that Callan Park isn't left to rot, despite concerns that the state government could axe it.
The state government doesn't want to spend a dollar in Callan Park. They've demonstrated that through their conduct over the last 5 or 6 years since they came to office. They're overseeing the demolition by neglect of a range of heritage buildings in Callan Park.
Just 2 years ago, bids by the then Labor councillor Simon Emsley to have the Welcome Centre transformed into short-term refugee accommodation were pushed back by the then Baird government. But Byrne says he still has these plans in sight if he can win state government backing.
I thought the real opportunity here for the state government was that they could attract state and federal funding and other resources to rehabilitate some of the buildings for this use. And it's disappointing that short-term residential accommodation hasn't been supported by the state government at this point, but we want to make the day centre and the refugee welcome centre that is up and running there such a success that over time we can convince them that short-term accommodation is a good thing.
With community consultations set to soon commence, the services could be rolling out in a matter of weeks.
Big thanks to Georgia Clark for that report. And don't go anywhere, because coming up we've got Seeking Sydney.
Here's the latest in new music on 2SER this week. Polished pop perfection from Crepes. Think it's time for me to try. Widescreen sounds from Sydney, courtesy of Purdy. And defiantly tough and sweetly soulful hip-hop from Rhapsody. The power to dusty make a grown man cry. The day I came apart, my mama, I saw a grown man cry. They say it has magic powers, even magic ain't die. Wake you about to sleep and take a 3 a.m. car ride. 2SER, stories, ideas, and the home of the best in new music. Family and job.
That was Puzzle, one half of the Californian neo-punk duo The Garden, and his song from 2015 called I Saw an Angel. Now on to Seeking Sydney. Sydney, you asked and we answered. For 2SER's weekly Seeking Sydney segment, where reporters here at the station investigate questions submitted by 2SER listeners on our website. This week, Monica Samayoa answered your question, how was Fort Denison built on such a tiny island in the middle of Sydney Harbour?
flag is the national flag. This is Paul Denison.
Welcome to Seeking Sydney, where we answer your curious questions about our harbour city. I'm Monica Samioa. This week, we answered a question sent in by our very own Michael Jones. How did they build Fort Denison on such a little island in the middle of Sydney Harbour? To get the most accurate and correct information, I had help from Discovery Coordinator David Thompson. So first things first, we're going to give you a brief history of Fort Denison.
This is the Martello Tower. It's on Fort Denison here. It's one of two in the Southern Hemisphere, and this is the most complete one in the world. Now, the Martello Towers come about from... It was during the Napoleon Wars where two British warships with over 100 guns on board went to attack an island called Corsica. And in the bay there that they were entering, called Martella Bay, that's where Martello Tower came from, they saw one of these towers, just one of the towers, nothing else. And they couldn't get past it with their 100 guns. And they were so impressed with the design that the British built 187 of these throughout their interests around the world. And as I said, there's two in the Southern Hemisphere, one in South Africa and one here in Australia.
David told me in the original design, the entrance is supposed to be made on the second level, which would then require a rope and a ladder to get inside. But since it's such a small island, they decided to make the entrance at the bottom, magazines in the second level and the guns on top. Towards the bottom of the tower, there are about 4 meters thick of sandstone, and at the top, it is nearly 3 meters thick. In the first level of the tower, you will find the magazine storage room, and on the second level houses the guns that are over 200 years old. It took about 10 men to operate and fired 36-pound projectiles. After explaining how much effort and strength it takes to operate the guns, David then told me something that surprised me.
There was never any shots fired in anger from Fort Denison. What had happened is when it was built, it took so many years to build. They started building and started considering the fort in the 1830s. And it was because of two American warships coming into our harbour in 1836. We didn't know they were coming. There was no mobile or email. They came in the evening. Britain had just been to war with America. And they came into our colony the next morning to say hello, but they also brought in a scenario. Last night, we entered your harbour, destroyed everything that you had, and left before sun rose. And that put the chills up our colony here, thinking that was quite embarrassing. They could do anything. So we started to scramble around to build fortifications. We had a couple here and there, but we thought Fort Denison would be a great place.
They brought convicts to start flattening the island with explosives and quarrying the stone to reclaim land towards Circular Quay.
Around Circular Quay, if you've been there, you'll see these little round circles, and it'll say Shoreline 1857 or 1815 or something like that. So it grew and grew and grew into what it is today. And much of that stone that they used came from Fort Denison, because as I mentioned, it was inferior stone. It couldn't be used for building. And a lot of the stone they just took out and dumped in the harbour as well. So a lot of the stuff they really didn't want, the smaller stone and things like that. So they just dumped it into Sydney Harbour.
After a while, they stopped building Fort Denison because, well, they didn't have permission. There were no funds allocated until 1845, which then took 12 years to complete until 1857.
Another reason people don't think about these days is what happened in 1852, where we needed to fortify Australia. And a lot of people don't think of it. We discovered gold. We became very rich very quickly. And we even heard rumours of other countries putting together raiding parties where they were going to come out and raid our colony for all our gold reserves. But no one ever turned up. And it's something that slipped away in history, but people don't think about the fact that we had to really think about protecting ourselves.
So after all that hard work to make one of the most secure and safe towers in the Southern Hemisphere, it was never put to use. They didn't even have an army personnel at the tower.
I'm Army Force out here. They put a lot of volunteers out here. And if anyone's heard of the old program, Dad's Army, that's what it was like. It was just a whole lot of 44 volunteers out here. They were poorly trained. They had to buy their own uniforms and make their own uniforms. But it was later on they sent out two soldiers to help train them, and it brought up their morale. But they never even fired the guns, the volunteers. And yeah, so it was obsolete, but they still had to look like they were using it.
I was so curious to know, with no machinery, how exactly were they able to flatten the stone and how long did it take?
The stone, it was just with picks and cold chisels, you know, like just those types of tools. And you get a hammer and you just face, it's called facing the rock. And so they do that all by hand and all by, you know, just labour. And the stonemasons that work out here today, they because we were constantly replacing stone, just to, because it does erode, it does deteriorate. And they do the same thing, but they do that back at their workplaces. But yeah, just with picks, it's all hard labour, and there was no machinery back then, and it would have been very, very hard work. And the way that they pick this stone up, and it can be quite heavy, you know, we're looking at 3 tonnes of pop here, of some of the stone. And they'd have a triangular wooden arch, and it'd be obviously the pointy part going up. Then they'd put that into position, in the upright position where they want their stone to be. But then they come along and they lower it down to where the piece of stone is. They attach the stone to the wood on that with the block and tackle. Then with ropes, they raise that triangular piece back up, therefore picking up the piece of stone and placing it into the place that they want it to be. But they'd have that all worked out because they didn't want to actually start trying to roll this stone because they just didn't know where it was, how heavy it was actually. But
today, Fort Denison isn't just a sweet spot to watch the New Year's Eve fireworks or have a wedding reception. There's a computer-operated tide gauge that goes 20 meters deep that records currents every 5 seconds.
And you know what? Most people, when they come out here, say, I've come past this place all my life and I've never been here. And one of the great things I love to say is, well, you're here now and it doesn't matter. Now you're here and you can see what it's all about.
If you have a chance to visit Fort Denison during the summer, you will not only get to witness a great piece of history, but you'll also see the best view of Sydney Harbour. I'd like to thank Michael for asking this question and also David Thompson for teaching us a little bit about our history right here in Sydney Harbour. If you'd like for us to answer a question you have about Sydney, like why are the streets so crazily arranged and hard to navigate, or is there really a lake underneath the Sydney streets, send them over. We would love to answer your questions. Head on over to 2scr.com and look for Seeking Sydney for the previous stories and to submit your question.
That was Monica Samayoa for Seeking Sydney. You're listening to Razor's Edge on 2SCR 107.3. This is Aphex Twin. That brings us to the end of this edition of Razor's Edge, to SER's home for New South Wales news. I'm Ellie Madrich, and we'll be back next week at 7:30 p.m. Thursday evening with stories big and small. We tweet and podcast all of our stories during and after the show, so follow Razor's Edge on Twitter and check out all of our past stories and all of the amazing content made here at 2SER. Don't go anywhere because Static is up next with 2 hours of awesome new music for you. To take us out, we have a song from our feature album, the self-titled Weather Station. This is 30.
It's been a great pleasure to introduce the Weather Station.
There was a time you put your hand on the small of my back. I was surprised that you touched me like that. But there in your hand was a current of life I could hardly stand or stay still. And I didn't imagine if I did, I'd made some joke of it. It was strange how I could feel so sane, so plain when you're around. Colored rose and easy. Yeah, I could see it so simple, unsubtle, impossible, clearly and strange, far and as close as a mountain range. On the horizon, driving all day, there I was so sane, so plain after everything. Raising a child in that ruby, she was three, now he told me.